Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I'm very excited to have this show because I love having this guest on. He is an investigative journalist, somebody who's not afraid to speak truth to power and has been following the ongoings of our politics, of our election cycle. And we're in a position now, I don't know what your politics are, but there's choices that need to be made. And I, for one, was curious specifically about this mail-in voting because I think it's being conflated. So I wanted to have Mr. Matthew Vadim come on. He's an investigative journalist. He is a contributor to the Epoch Times, and he is also a documentarian who's done awesome work and has a web-based documentary series, the America Under Siege series. And I'm sure we'll speak about that during the time that we're on with each other. But I wanted to thank you so much, Mr. Vadim, for coming on, because I read your article about the election, and I think it's something that we as Americans need to understand. We're being told so many things. I'm not sure they're all true. The media says one thing. The Democrats say one thing. The president is saying something else. And I'm finding it very confusing. So first of all, welcome. Thank you for taking time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. Happy to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I really enjoyed our last conversation.
Great. So I enjoyed it too.
That's good. So I want to get right down to it about the nuts and bolts. What is mail-in voting versus absentee voting? Is there a difference?
Well, the absentee vote, I'm not an election lawyer, but the idea is that if you're not going to be able to vote on election day, in all states, you can get you can vote absentee. And in many states, you don't even have to have an excuse. Whereas in others, you have to have an excuse. You have to have a valid reason for not absentee voting. Absentee voting, as I understand it, again, I'm not an election lawyer, so I don't know all the procedures. I just have a big picture view of what's going on. You can vote absentee in advance, in person, or you can vote absentee via mail. Okay. Sometimes when people vote absentee, a witness will be required. Sometimes it's not. It really depends on the jurisdiction that you're voting in. So absentee voting and mail-in voting are not 100% the same thing, but there's a large overlap between the two. What we're talking about, what the controversy is in the current election coming up, the November 3rd presidential and off-year congressional elections, is about mail-in voting, because the COVID-9 pandemic has made some people fearful of casting ballots at their polls, even though I think there have been studies saying that there's no undue risk, there's no greater risk of catching COVID-19 by voting in person a polling station, than there is just in, going about your everyday life. But it's something some people are fearful of, and they want to be able to vote in person. And a lot of governors have been making emergency orders to try to make it so that everyone is voting by mail, as is the case in some states right now, like Washington State and Oregon State, where I think everyone votes by mail, and possibly Utah, and I think there's two other states where they do that. And we have seen that with mail-in voting, often the results can be delayed a very long time. In past elections, for governor and for president, we've seen, we've been waiting on Oregon results a long time. Usually that's not much of a problem because we know that in presidential elections, because we know that Oregon is going to vote Democrat unless there's some seismic event over there that makes people change their partisan bent. But it's now there's going to be so many states where people are voting, where all the voting is done, all or almost all of the voting is done by mail, that there's a good chance the election will not be resolved on the evening of November the 3rd, or even the next morning. It could drag on for days or weeks or months. We don't really know for sure. If one candidate doesn't convincingly beat the other, we could be in for a long wait for the ultimate result. And I think that's what people are worried about.
I think with good reason. I mean, a couple of days ago, an article came out, I think it was the New York Post, from a whistleblower, Democratic-leaning whistleblower, who works his magic in Jersey and New York. And there's a whole scam that they have going, you know, steaming open ballots and stuffing them with other ones and telling people you're going to pick their ballots up and mail it for them. I mean, there's stories all over the country where, I think it's Nevada maybe, that they found or they were sent ballots pre-filled out. You know, so I just, in terms of my vote, I want it to count. I don't want it watered down. I don't want somebody negating my vote. There's stories of mail carriers throwing whole ballot boxes out and being able to see the envelope and know that it's a Democrat or a Republican envelope. So
there's always stories about people, about letter carriers and people who work at the U.S. Postal Service, weird hoarders keeping bags of mail. Mm-hmm. And we don't know if they had any sort of ill intent to affect an election or if they're just sick people who like to hoard mail. So, I assume that they're trying to do it to affect an election, but who knows, really. But these things always happen. We hear about them every election, and sometimes they affect the result, like a few years ago when Al Franken was running against the incumbent Norm Coleman for the U.S. Senate seat in Minnesota some years back. Norm Coleman won narrowly on election night. But then they just kept voting. They just kept counting the votes, and they just kept finding new boxes of votes that they'd missed somehow. Isn't that miraculous? And all of them helped. And every time they found a new tranche of votes somewhere, it benefited without exception Al Franken. And eventually, Al Franken was declared the winner after a hotly contested recount process that lasted for months. And that could happen. That could happen again in races that are close. If they're not close, then it's not going to make a difference, because even with massive cheating, you know, they can only throw a few percentage points worth of votes somebody's way. It's really hard to do more than that. So, but there are a lot of close races, and there promised to be a lot of close races in this upcoming election too. So it could make a difference. And I think that's what one side is counting on. Democrats want everybody voting by mail, because then the process is as crazy and disorganized as possible, which is the way that the left likes it. They like causing problems. They like when there's chaos, because it's an opportunity. A crisis is an opportunity. It's become a cliche by now, and it's all a Alinsky cliche, that a crisis is an opportunity to get something done that you wouldn't otherwise be able to get done.
Well, so, it's actually been said, too. It's not like they're – it's not hidden. I've heard it many times recently from people. Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Right. And just like COVID-19 or what at the Epoch Times they call the CCP virus, because in Chinese Communist Party virus, since China unleashed this disease, this virus on the world, whether it was engineered in a lab or discovered out in a forest somewhere and then basically bottled and mass produced, or whether they just acted negligently or deliberately tried to get Chinese nationals all infected with the virus to spread all over the world in order to, and particularly the United States, China is to blame. So I think it makes sense. I'm digressing a bit, but I think it makes sense to call it the CCP virus, because it's that's who caused it.
I don't think you're digressing at all. I think it's a big picture that we just, you know, we're in one piece of it with mail fraud, you know, or secure elections. But I believe that the COVID situation, I believe the Chinese influence in our democracy, in our Congress, and throughout our political structure actually does play a role with this.
Yeah.
And I like to ask
forget Russia. You know, what did they do? They spent, after they studied this issue to death, they found that Russia spent something like $6,000 on Facebook ads.
I know.
And that's supposed to have thrown the election in 2016? Come on. Give me a break.
That's nothing. I agree. And they really blew it out of proportion. But I want to take our first break and come back, because I think that's a really important point that people who just listen to mainstream media, I don't think they really get. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Matthew Vadim. And I think before the break, you were doing a wonderful job of explaining, or starting to explain, a bigger picture. You know, I always have the mantra of follow the money and who stands to gain. And if anybody's paying attention, we don't have the same relationship that we have with China. It seems to be a lot more adversarial. It seems like we're taking our power back. There's a lot of money that's in the breach. And I think that they would prefer that things change and go back to the way they were. So, you know, money's everywhere within our political system. And every day I'm reading about how the Chinese are influencing the economics of various states, have adversarial relationships with various governors. And I don't know if you heard this, but they were leaning on various states and governors to do their bidding. Otherwise, they would pull their business and ruin them economically. Did you hear that?
Yeah. I'm not an expert on what China is doing, but I know they do interfere in other countries' affairs, including the United States, even more heavily so in places like Australia and New Zealand, which are, you know, more, I guess, strategically important to China because they're right in their own backyard, so to speak, mm-hmm. and they're very heavy-handed. You've now seen in the United States there's an effort to close down the Confucius institutes, which are basically little hotbeds of subversion of People's Liberation Army, Chinese Red Army activity, and centers of propaganda and domestic subversion mm-hmm. in the United States that pose as, I guess, basically as cultural exchange centers between the United States and the People's Republic of China. But their true mission is not a benign one.
How do we get to that point that a foreign country, an adversary, has this much power over our education system? And I remember at some points in a couple of administrations ago that we were outsourcing parts of our military vehicles and planes, et cetera, to China, which makes absolutely no sense to me that you would have them have that much control over your military structure, infrastructure, I should say.
You mean like for spare parts and stuff?
Spare parts for the communication systems, guidance systems. It really was quite a threaded through relationship, which on the face of it makes no sense. And I think that when the current administration got in there, they took that away and took all that outsourcing back so the United States controlled it.
Or at least are in the process of doing. I don't think it's like a switch you can just flip
and then
things change instantly. But I think they're moving in that direction. Yeah.
And well, they should. Otherwise, how do you have a country that can protect itself? But let's...
I don't know. We're not bigger friends with India. India... It's where it's at over there in the Far East. India should be our natural allies. It's a huge democratic country. They share many of our values, and they don't hate us and want to kill us. So it would be nice. And they have almost as many people. They've still got 1 billion people. They're not quite as big as China, but you know, they have civilized values, and we should be their friends. But anyway, that's my view. I'm pretty unabashedly pro India.
Well, I think that you're on the right track, and I think we're moving that way. When the president went there for his visited India. And we're starting to move towards
manufacturing. He was like a rock star when he was there.
I know. It was, you know, well, no one covered it really. But if you were watching the internet, yeah, it was huge. Like 100,000 people in one venue just to see
that. That's not even that many for India.
No, it's not actually. But I believe this is all, you know, we're talking about things that may seem to be unrelated to what's going on. But in healthcare and medicine, I think they're all tied, quite frankly. You know, we talked about the Chinese having a dog in the hunt with starting this ball rolling in terms of COVID. But I understand they also have a little jump on treatment like vaccines and remdesivir and making getting the dibs on, how can I put it? I forget what it's called now, where you get the control over a medication. I'm drawing a blank on the name. Thank you so much. Yeah. So, I mean, they're working on that. So, again, who stands to gain? Is this just one big picture so that we can be on our knees and them be able to control us and control our elections?
I don't know about. You think that they're trying to exercise control over a possible cure or vaccine in order to influence U.S. behavior? I don't know about that. They've really damaged their standing in the United States already. I don't know if that would be enough to get it back, especially when, you know, you're talking about Chinese science. Let's put it in quote marks, okay? These people aren't anywhere near the United States in terms of developing useful things. All they're good at is copying and stealing, and violating intellectual property and, you know, like pirates. Stealing things and reproducing them, and then they sell this stuff back to us. So, you know, I don't think they're that much to fear in terms of competition in that area. It's a shame that we're so dependent on them for pharmaceuticals right now, but I think we're going to be moving away from that in future years, because it's not a sustainable thing. We cannot depend on a nation that, you know, isn't exactly our enemy. They're kind of frenemies right now, I guess, with us. Frenemies, combination of friend and enemy. And but we're moving more in the enemy direction right now. And we really cannot be reliant on them for things that are vitally important, such as pharmaceuticals and industrial production, the rare earths, those metals or minerals or whatever they are that are used in making iPhones and various other technologies. We've been over dependent on them, and that is going to have to end. Though again, I don't think it's something you can just flick a switch, an on off switch over, and then the problem is solved. It's something that it's going to have to be tackled over a longer time frame than that.
I think you have to get started, though, and it's nice to see us starting to unhook ourselves from that and bringing our pharmaceutical capability back to the United States.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you didn't ask me to explain what rare earths are, because then I would have looked very foolish.
Well, no problem. I kind of know what these are.
It's earth. It's dirt. It's rare. Yeah, that's it.
Basically. But I think we're bringing that as well back to the United States, or finding other countries to do
it. Yeah, I think China has most of it, but I'm not sure.
Well, China has, they've gone out and gotten it by befriending various developing countries and buying up property. I mean, they're very good at what they do. But even if it wasn't China, let's be clear, I don't think one country in the world should have this much power over these many things in a supply chain. I don't think it's healthy. So what happens if the country has some sort of catastrophic incident? The whole world is going to be, you know, out of trouble.
We shouldn't be overly dependent or beholden to them. That is, it's a bad idea strategically.
Agreed. And now I think everybody's aware of that. And I think maybe the COVID had a bit of a boomerang effect where now we are watching. And I think as consumers, as healthcare workers, everybody's now looking at things, I think, with a different take. And, you know, the voting aspect, to me, this is one of the most important elections that's ever going to happen because we're at a crossroads. And I see it as, you know, democracy versus Marxism. I don't know how you see it, but it seems to be that if the powers that are currently at odds with the government win, this voting situation will end. I don't believe we'll have votes in the same way in the future. It won't count for
much. Or the government will be so powerful, it won't matter.
Exactly.
It won't matter who you elect.
And that's scary, actually.
Well, that's the goal of the far left, which has taken over the, you know, isn't quite the marginal little fringe-like thing that we thought of. It was like we thought of it as in previous years. Now they control the Democratic Party. The inmates are running the asylum.
Yeah, they are kind of.
I would take away that qualifier, kind of. I don't think you need to be. They are running the asylum. These people are dangerous and kooky, and you know, there are problems with Republicans. You know, Donald Trump himself isn't perfect, but gee whiz, compared to these people who want us. Who want riots and murder in the streets in order to advance their cause. And then, you know, did you see there was some Democratic operative who was on the Tucker Carlson show when Kamala Harris was named as the VP, as the vice presidential candidate, to go on the ticket with Joe Biden. And then the other guy was so upset, the professional careerist Democrat was so upset because Tucker Carlson didn't pronounce it Kamala. He said Kamala or something like that, which, based on the way it's spelled, seems reasonable. And I don't think he meant anything by it. But this other guy, I thought, what was his name? Richard Goldstein or something.
Bald guy.
Very obnoxious.
But anyway,
he got very, very upset and just, oh, my God, it's terrible. You're being a racist and a sexist by deliberately mispronouncing her name. I don't quite see it.
I don't see it at all. But
no.
That's what they've done. It's
but her name is the least of her problems. She's a horrible person. But you know,
that's
you could have shows on that.
I certainly could. And talk about, you know, the hypocrisy of what the left represents about freedom and being, you know, your best self and pursuing what you're put on this earth to do. That's not what they stand for, and that's not what we're seeing. And let's take our second break because I want again to go through a little bit of. They're showing themselves. This is not something that's benign. If you live in any state that's been locked down, I think you know exactly what to expect coming down the road. On that note, let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Sidera's medical cost sharing community is a refreshing approach for managing large and unexpected healthcare costs. This surprisingly affordable non-insurance solution is centered on people helping people. If you're looking for an intentionally non-status quo approach to managing healthcare costs, Sidera is exactly what you're looking for. Visit Sidera.com/controlyourhealth. That's Sidera.com/controlyourhealth. Welcome back to Living in Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Matthew Vadim. He is an author. He's a documentarian. He also writes for the Epoch Times. And before we were taking the break, we were talking about what's really out there. I mean, this is the COVID crisis has been a very interesting experience, in my opinion, because people who always tout about inclusivity and diversity and, you know, being letting people live their lives have been shown to be absolute totalitarians and lawlessness and they stand for death and destruction, and now it's proven because they're not. I mean, anybody living through this, if Nancy Pelosi getting her hair done when no one else can work, it's like a double standard. I don't think anybody can sit there and say that, stick their head in the sand and say this is a good thing. What's your take on that?
That you mean that the left is showing itself, showing its true colors?
Yeah, they've been outed.
Well, yeah. Well, for those of us who study these things for a living, you know, it's not. It's nothing new to us, but they've really the problems with the COVID-19 and with race relations have really brought it out into the open. And that's the fact that the left wants to destroy the United States. They're not, you know, they don't want just a few changes. They want they want the country to be completely radically transformed. Mm-hmm. And I think that Barack Obama laid the groundwork for this. He didn't manage to achieve what he wanted during his term, and that's this turmoil, which no matter what he says, he loves. He enjoys it. Every time someone is murdered and there's chaos and there's a riot or somewhere presided over by Black Lives Matter or Antifa or what have you, Barack Obama and his comrades celebrate. They rejoice in it because it makes society less stable. And when things are volatile, people are willing to turn to strongmen. They're willing to turn to radical solutions, such as socialism and communism, that if things were going well, they would never consider. No, you'd have to be a total idiot to favor, you know, giving the government total control over the economy if things were going well. But the idea is more appealing to a lot more people when things are not going so well, because they don't understand economics. They don't understand that a lot of the problems were caused by government intervention in the first place. And you know, it goes on like that. So it becomes a situation that it gets harder for free market people and conservatives to talk their way out of, because it's harder to make the case for liberty than it is for tyranny, for strong governmental responses. That's the case, you know, rhetorically at least, is very easy to make. You know, all you have to do is appeal to emotion. But liberty is much more difficult to argue for. Ordered liberty, like we're supposed to have in the United States under the U.S. Constitution that was given to us by the founding fathers and the framers to the Constitution. The left is making extreme solutions seem more appealing right now. And fortunately, polling seems to be suggesting that people are growing disenchanted with Antifa. Mm-hmm. No longer, there was a time when a lot of people just a few months ago were starting to view them as freedom fighters. Same with Black Lives Matter. They were starting to view them as a necessary tonic for the nation's, a necessary antidote to the nation's racial problems. And now the public is turning away from that, you know, because it's not. Have you ever gotten into an argument with a Black Lives Matter supporter? It's like smashing your head against an impenetrable wall. They say, oh, you don't think that Black Lives Matter? No, I think all lives matter. Oh, but the Black lives are in danger. Well, no, not really. Maybe they were under Jim Crow, which Democrats brought in, but not anymore. And what's this crap about white supremacy? You know, this is just the strange stuff from the fringes of postmodernism in English departments in universities. And it's just pure insanity. And now and critical race theory and critical legal theory and all these critical theories, people are starting, I think, to turn away from it because they realize how dangerous it is, even though they don't fully understand these trends. But you know, which are, you know, actually kind of hard to understand to begin with,
because they don't make sense. So if you do take a knee and you are part of the, you know, if you happen to be white and you're part of the, I understand and I commiserate with you, it's never enough. Ask the mayor from Portland he's all in, but they still want to burn his house down, yeah. and they still want him to quit.
I wouldn't feel sorry if something happened to him, but am I allowed to think that? Am I a bad person?
I think that you're honest. That's what I think.
Okay. I don't want it to happen to him, but if it did, it's like, I wouldn't lose any sleep over it because he brought it on himself. But anyway.
Well, I think,
I'm a terrible person.
Let's talk about what's really happening. He is fomenting violence against people who are citizens in his city.
Ted Wheeler, is the Antifa mayor of Portland, Oregon. You're right.
And the only people getting hurt are citizens, business owners, Black-owned businesses. It's amazing. You have people put up signs that it's Black-owned or minority-owned, and they get wiped out just like the rest of them, because ultimately, you're the enemy. If you're not part of their system, I don't care what color you are, they're going to see you as the enemy and take you out.
Right. And now they're demanding that white people give up their houses to Black people?
Shocking. Yeah.
Based upon what?
Institutional racism.
Yeah.
I still don't know what that is. What is that?
They claim that the system is rigged against people of color.
And you know what's really funny? They're in colleges and they're the 1%, or they're athletes making millions of dollars, and it's not Black people giving them that money. It's white people. So how much racism can there be? And my thing is, if you feel so bad, maybe you should quit.
Right.
It's so hypocritical. Do what I say, not what I do.
Right.
You're supposed to eat dirt and live in a 4x4, but they know what's best for you. I mean, honestly, the best thing that could have happened from this is that these influencers get outed and we stop listening to them. Just turn it off. They don't help you. Are they paying your mortgage? Are they buying your groceries? Do they give you a job? The answer is no.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's insanity, and it's very hard to think your way through insanity, through psychosis, through people who can't think, and to understand them. It's worth trying, I guess, but it's not easy.
Well, it's like any bully. You know, if you say that I'm done, I'm not doing this anymore, it stops. But I think I know most people don't want to have any kind of confrontation. I understand that. That is a natural human emotion, just not to do it, not to bother. And if I put my head down, it'll all go away. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think it emboldens them. I think that makes them more violent. And I think it makes them think that they got this, right? So I'm not fomenting. I don't think people should be violent, but you should stand up for your rights. And if you don't believe something like someone coming to you and telling you to put your fist up in solidarity, you don't believe that, then
right, cornering them, surrounding them at a restaurant, like that
exactly.
happened to that woman, the diner in Washington, D.C., who actually said that she was sympathetic to the Black Lives Matter movement. But, you know, what she didn't like to be forced to do things. Why can't they just let her eat in peace? And that's not good enough, because it's never enough for these revolutionary radical nuts. It's never enough. You can never satisfy them.
Well, I think at the very, like you said, the fact that Antifa is no longer as seen as the, you know, the Robin Hoods or the
or whatever they were seen as, yeah.
Whatever they were seen as, that's not the case anymore. They're literally violent in their hit squads. That's what they're becoming. So from
now they're murdering people in cold
exactly.
blood at their riots. So.
And that's a frightening thought. And, you know, chemical weapons like the chlorine bombs and things like that. This has to be, we need law and order, frankly. I don't care what color you are. And, you know, is this, again, another tactic, do you think, to make the election, like make people want to stay home and vote by mail because they're afraid of being, you know, waylaid by one of these Antifa groups?
Right. Yeah. It's. I'm glad that people are turning away from them.
Well, I mean,
I don't know what. How do you want me to elaborate on that? Like, they're terrible, and people are moving away from them. But they're seeing the consequences of going along with these radicals, and that means that large parts of cities get burnt down, and it's been happening. Not just in the usual hotspots, you know, like Chicago mm-hmm. and New York and Los Angeles and to a lesser extent, Washington, D.C. It's been happening everywhere.
Right.
All major cities have been hit by something like 100 of them had been hit with the civil disturbances in recent months, and particularly after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, which we're now learning might not have been related to harsh treatment that he received at the hands of the police. So,
no, it seems like it was fentanyl.
And it seems like that. And yeah. maybe the officer was too harsh, and maybe he should be dealt with in some respect. But if they can't prove that it caused his death, then those cops are going to go free. And because they were overcharged to begin with, they are there's going to be more rioting when they go free or when they get convicted of lesser offenses. So
it's like this domino or this round.
There doesn't seem to be any good way out of the situation.
No, except for actually there is, which is to respect each other. On that note, let's take our final break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Mr. Matthew Vadim. And, you know, before the break, there is a solution. I think one is to become educated and stop living in fear. And I think for the last 4 or 5 months, we've been under a pall where if you, God forbid, you're just watching TV or reading the main newspapers, I feel it's like a terrorism kind of attack on people, seniors and everybody. They're afraid to leave their homes. I just find that to be so low. And if you're going to attack the most vulnerable in our society just to win an election, I think that says a lot about your mindset and what kind of person you are. And it just makes it very easy to disengage from this system. And thank God you exist, because reading your blogs and your articles, it makes a big difference, because it's not about just emotion. It's the facts. I mean, just the fact that you're able to tell us about this left-wing movement with Antifa, and they've been coddled just like the gangs were coddled initially by Nancy Pelosi. These people have an agenda. It's almost like they're the military version or squad of this movement, because it's like the Marxist, and then you have the military side of it. You've got the legislative side with the various Democrat and Republican, well, basically Democrat, but I would say there's also Republicans involved with this as well. Whoever's getting money from China or from these entities, they're also part of the problem, aren't they?
Well, yeah, definitely. They're in the pocket of whoever is taking money from China is in the pocket of the Communist Party of China, and can't be trusted. And we have to curtail the influence of China in American affairs, including in American electoral politics. They're the real foreign power intervening in U.S. elections, mm-hmm. not Russia, which, you know, has had some involvement, but nothing that's been nothing that's actually had much of an influence on anything. It's China that's trying to screw us up, that's trying to weaken us. And so far, they've been having a great year. 2020 has been a very successful year for Chinese communist subversion in the United States and across the entire planet, actually. You know, it couldn't be going better for them.
Well, hopefully they hit a road bump with this COVID situation. The whole world being locked down and economies being decimated, people dying unnecessarily. I think I hope that people are realizing or going back to how did this start and how did we get into the situation, and to unravel and untie themselves as we are doing from the Chinese and the CCP specifically. You know, from the standpoint of the election, the fact that Joe Biden has a history so intertwined with China, that should give people pause, shouldn't it?
Absolutely. He's China's boy. He's in his family, Hunter Biden, business relationships with China, business relationships that I thought Hunter Biden said he was going to end, but apparently has not. He's still on various corporate boards of Chinese companies, at least last time I checked a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And nothing has changed. Joe Biden is there to, you know, he's gotten, this is a guy who's been in politics his whole life, basically, and has, he's deeply corrupt in the sense that he is beholden to his masters in Beijing. He takes orders from them, so to speak, and from the rest of the international activist left, and from George Soros and all these people. He is doing things as vice president and as U.S. senator from Delaware. He did things to help China, and he's going to do more things to help China if he is elected president of the United States, which is a scary thought. And then if he's elected president, how long is he actually going to serve as president? Because he's pretty clearly senile now. His Alzheimer's seems to be getting worse. And, you know, how long would it be before Kamala Harris takes over and becomes president of the United States when after Biden is after he dies in office or is declared incompetent under, I guess it's the 25th Amendment and removed by the cabinet, because it's going to happen. If he's elected president, he's not going to serve. There's no way he's going to serve a 4-year term. You know, Kamala Harris is really, you know, this election is about electing Kamala Harris president of the United States. And she's pretty scary too, because she's a, I don't know if it's so much the China stuff, it says that she's such a ruthless demagogue, mm-hmm. in a way that Joe Biden is not. Joe Biden is a bumbler, okay? Like, stand up for Chuck. Everybody saw that video, right? Where he was at some kind of a speech or a campaign rally, and he was praising somebody in the audience named Chuck or Charles. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Everybody, stand up for Chuck. Let's, you know, show us, you know, we appreciate him." And then it turns out he's paralyzed in a wheelchair, and he can't. Or he told Chuck to stand up, and he said he can't. Then he realized the guy was in a wheelchair, and he couldn't stand up. So then he had tried to make a joke about the situation, saying everybody else should stand up for Chuck. Anyway, you know, these kinds of faux pas are an everyday occurrence with Joe Biden, who has in his various media appearances in recent weeks has seemed to endorse Donald Trump and has said things that it's not even clear what he meant, because the thought is so garbled through this degenerative brain disorder that he has, nervous disorder that he has, and we don't even know a lot of the time what he's talking about. He did a good job, I guess, with his speech at the DNC at the Democratic National Convention a few days ago, but. That he, you know, that was a really important thing. I'm sure he got really, really hyped for it, and his adrenaline was flowing, and he realized how important it was, so he didn't screw up the speech. But everybody knows that's not what he's like in everyday life, and that he is barely able to function. And it's sad that the Democrats are still putting him up for office, and it's obvious that he's just intended to be a placeholder for somebody else. The most obvious replacement being his vice president, if he gets elected, Kamala Harris.
I think it's very cynical, frankly.
Yes.
And let's talk about her, because if she is the standee, you know, he's the standee for her. You're absolutely right. I've read articles about how she conducted her office as the AD, you know, the Attorney General of California.
Right.
Prison system. Oh my God.
She was a real hard ass, a hardliner when it came to going after people, you know, for marijuana offenses. And then in one appearance, she laughed about her own past marijuana use like it was no big deal. And yet she was such a hardliner when it came as a district attorney and as Attorney General of California going after people on drug offenses. So, you know, it's one rule for her and another rule for the little people.
I agree.
And this is what she stands for. And she is, is quite ruthless and demagogic, as I say, in a way that Joe Biden is not, in a way that Joe Biden could never get away with. She's also attractive and charming. Like, if you didn't know any better, you'd think, oh, she's okay. What's wrong with her? You have to actually look beneath the surface, and you actually have to do your research and find out what she stands for to discover what a sinister person she is and how dangerous she would be as a vice president or potential president of the United States. It's a really scary thought.
I think you're absolutely right. People need to do their research. I remember one article that I read about where if the parent had a child that was truant, that the parent would be arrested. And she crowed about having done that to somebody. So this mom had two jobs to keep her family together, to keep her child enclosed, to keep them housed. And so the kid didn't go to school, I guess, a couple times, and the mom got arrested. So there's no empathy. I don't find that any warmth, empathy. It's my way or no way. I think you're absolutely right. And I think she's more frightening than Biden ever could be. Because yep. I don't think she has a conscience about it.
She's a cold, heartless prosecutor who's willing to do anything. And there's evidence that she's improperly withheld evidence in cases and all sorts of ethical problems with her as a prosecutor or attorney general and as attorney general of California. She's bad news. And, she can't. I wouldn't trust her with anything. So
imagine the power of the presidency.
It's too horrible to contemplate. Actually,
in other words, in the minute that we have left, this is an election that means something. Get off of the I'm black or white or green. I need to vote a certain way because of the way I look. That's what they're trying to make everybody think. It's about content of character, not about color of skin. And in the minute that we have left, how can people reach you, watch your videos, your documentaries, and get your book? I know you wrote a book called Subversion, Inc. That's the most recent one, right?
Subversion, Inc. And then I wrote another one. It was in 2011. That's at Amazon.com. It's about Acorn and Obama. And I wrote something called Team Jihad in 2017, published by Center for Security Policy Press. And you can get these things at Amazon. You can watch the America Under Siege, a trilogy, a three-part documentary series at Dangerous Documentaries, their website. It's also on YouTube. And my website is Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Vadum, VADUM.com. And I'm a freelance investigative reporter. And my biggest client at the moment is the Epoch Times. So you can read my work at the Epoch Times almost every day.
Well, I do. And it's an eye-opening experience. And people need to go to your website. They need to understand and buy your book so they can become learned. And it's really, you have to work. You're not, you know, it's not about spoon-feeding anybody. Go and do your research. Everything that we say in the show is because we've done the due diligence. We're hoping to jog your ability and your want to, because this is not a joke at this point. Matthew, I want to thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
I look forward to it in the future.
Okay, great.
And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.